Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. Today's guest has helped raise over $10 billion, worked with 3,500 founders, scientists, execs, and can spot a weak pitch faster than you can say Series A. Welcome to the Queen of Clarity, Beth Suzanne. Beth, welcome to the show. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Amazing. Beth, so you've coached over 3,500 founders, if I'm not mistaken. What's the number one mistake they keep making in their pitch?
Well, first of all, it's about 3,950 by now. Right. So I'd say that they need to realize that attention is the only currency that matters, but it's what specific type of attention should they give, which means they need to know the investor. They need to understand the motivation of the investor. So if they don't understand the motivation of the investor, the type of attention they're trying to get will could be wrong. So if they understand and know the audience they're talking to, what's important to them, what matters to them, then they can structure their opening in a way that grabs the attention that they need.
I like that. Beth, most founders start their pitch with, you know, the problem or the product. Where should they start to win the attention?
The idea of the problem and the solution, et cetera, the template that you have, there's 10 or 11 different categories. That's correct. But what you need to be give 30 seconds of a story. They call it a story, but it's just framing the problem in a way that'll stand out for the investor. Because they've and then after that, they can go into and describe the problem. But they need to have the numbers and the research that proves that there's a problem. So if you start... You should think about talking about your problem. If your team has exited before, then you talk about what's the next problem you want to solve for. If you have a personal story, then you can talk about that in terms of why you've decided to address this problem. So you have to think of something that's going to capture their attention.
Mm-hmm. Makes perfect sense. Deb, what's one part of the pitch where, you know, everyone loses the room and how do you fix it?
So there's not only one part where everyone would lose a pitch, but there's one thing that'll make you lose the pitch if you don't show up physically overconfident. And I don't mean bragging. I'm not talking about being bragging or arrogant, but you have to act as if you believe in yourself and what you're talking about. Yeah. So if you show up and your body posture and the type of language you're using is not really overconfident, they discount you. There was research that was done in 2018. They studied 200 investors in the U.S. and they found that if you're overconfident, you have a 58% better chance of getting the money. Yeah. And if you're hesitant with what you're describing, if you use a lot of whatever, or your voice tone doesn't sound confident, your body language doesn't stand up and act as if you know that you're the right person at the right time, talking about the right thing to the right people. That's the mental preparation you need to have in order to show up. If you have that mental preparation, you are totally in charge of your presentation, and the investors like you and get it. If you don't have that sort of delivery, then and they can see it the minute you walk up, and all of that influences their reaction more than most startup founders realize, much more.
Beth, it makes perfect sense. But there's like a thin line between confidence and cockiness, right? That you've got to be careful not to cross.
Yeah. So Marcin, the thing is that I've been in Europe the last 13 years, and I'm from Silicon Valley originally, and I've coached all these thousands of startups across all technologies. And in Europe, the issue isn't being too cocky. It's being too modest. When I work in California in Silicon Valley, then that's an issue that can be an issue about being too cocky. But here in Europe, that's generally not the problem.
Okay. Got it. You help people raise millions, Beth. But what's one thing money can't fix in a bad pitch?
It's your delivery, basically. You can have the right numbers, you can have the right data, you can have the right team, but if you deliver it in a way that doesn't convince them that you can execute, then you have to be able to execute. That's one thing. The other thing is if you don't have any experience or research, or you're not prepared to explain how you can scale. So you have to. That's another thing that can really sink you right away. Mm-hmm.
And I know that you've worked with, you know, universities like Oxford, or so companies like Singularity, Disney. What's the wildest transformation you've seen in just 2 days?
Well, I coached, he was a New York fintech guy from New York who had moved to Brazil, and he was designing a second stock exchange for Brazil. They only have one. They didn't have an alternative stock exchange. Uh-huh. And he was studying at the MBA program in Oxford. So I went to Said Business School to meet with him. And he had a 40-page single-spaced business plan. He wanted Yes. And that's all he had when we started. And he had, he was trying to raise $4 million. And he'd been trying for quite a while, unsuccessfully, a number of months. So he came and we designed the deck. There was about 15 slides, and the narrative and the delivery. And then I have a creative agency called Future Fables that I work with for the last 10 years, and they're dynamite at making sure that visually the design of the graphics supports your message, because the message is what counts, and the slides are there to support the message. Anyway, after 4 days, it was 4 days, not 2 days, because he started with a 40-page single-space business plan, as I mentioned, and most of my clients already have a deck, and I start helping them to edit the deck, and then it takes 2 days. But this took 4 days, and he raised the $4 million within 2 weeks when he got back. So
really, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so cool. You know, is business plan even a thing anymore? I mean, like 40 pages of like how you, like, who's going to go through it? I think like most investors don't even go through like 15 slides decks, all of them, like all the pages. So like, this is hard, I guess. I remember learning about how to pitch from when I was at the university, back in the university, from Guy Kawasaki's The Only 10 Slides You Need in Your Pitch, which was like the first rule was always like first, like kind of, I remember our lecturers were telling us, like, first, like, come up with your pitch. Then actually, based on that pitch, you can come up with more like a bigger business plan. So like kind of the opposite of what you were saying here. Now I think these days, like, pitch should be as crisp and as attractive as possible. No one probably even reads business plans.
No, they actually don't read the business plan. And the fact is, they did a study in the U.S. of I think it was out of Harvard. There's 200 VCs. And they found that before COVID, they spent 3 minutes and 44 seconds on their pitch decks, reviewing the pitch decks. And then these are like, you know, 10 to 15 slide pitch decks. And then after COVID, they only spend 2 minutes and 22 seconds.
Even less, exactly.
And even less. But actually, it's not the 10 to 15 slide. It's the 20 to 40 slide investor-ready pitch deck. So the longer decks that they get. So they spend just a few minutes. And they look at the financials at the back. They look at the team and who they are. And they look to see whether you have traction with your product. So that's what interests them. The other thing is that simplicity is key. Less is more, but it has to be, and it's very difficult to achieve the simplicity that you need to, because most of my clients or the founders, or I work with research scientists who are pitching for public money also, and for entrepreneurs in corporates, corporate venture funds, and I also work with VC funds who are raising their next fund. And it's very difficult when you're so close to it to understand what to surface and what's not important, what to highlight, what's not important. Mm-hmm. So what I help them do basically is to identify what to say, what not to say, and how to say it quickly.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. You know what? So I recently listened to one of the interviews from VCs from Silicon Valley, and they invested in some of that, like, generational companies that we have, like Uber, Airbnb, And the thing is about Pitch Deck even, that none of them actually remembers what was the pitch deck of the company they invested in. Like, it's all about the people. It's all about person that they invest in. Like, no one really cares about, like, stop the pitch decks even. Like, just prepare yourself and tell the story. Like, you are actually the pitch deck.
Right. That's true. That's really true. Totally aligns with what I said earlier about, you know, how you carry yourself. You have to understand what to say, what not to say, and how to say it so that they hear, they have a checklist in their mind, which you have to sort of address and make sure you cover the checklist. But who you are and how you deliver it really matters. There was one company out of Lithuania, this was like 10 years ago when I was there working with startups, that they pitched the investors, and the investors said, look, we hate your product, but we really like the team. So go away and find another product and then come back to us. So that's an extreme example, but it's true. It's mentally, they're assessing whether they want to fund you, because if they fund you, they're going to be working with you for years and years.
It's
right?
a relationship. Yeah, exactly. It's the same saying always, like, you know, great team with, let's say, shitty idea, it won't fly. And I mean, great team with shitty idea actually will figure it out.
Right.
And if you have the greatest idea in the world and the team is not clicking, it's just not gonna work.
Right.
Beth, I don't know why.
Keep wanting to call me
we'll
Deb.
Count down, so
call
finally,
me yeah. Deb. It's Beth.
So actually, let's talk delivery, because we already mentioned that topic several times. How do you coach someone who is naturally flat or nervous on stage?
A couple things. I have a technique that I teach all my clients, all my startups, that has worked enormously, and that's a breathing technique. About, you think the word so, and you breathe in through your nose and think the word so, and you breathe out through your mouth and you think the word hum, H-U-M-M-M-M-M-M-M, lots of M's. And what that does is it pulls your energy back in. So when you're pitched, you're nervous, right? Or not everybody, but many people get nervous, and because there's a lot at stake, and your energy is out, sort of worried about other people and whether you're going to do a good job or fail or whatever. And so the so hum breathing gets you grounded and pulls your energy back in, so your energy is available to yourself. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, I then have you think of a time in your life when you've struggled terribly, but have come to an enormously successful outcome. And that outcome means, so you do the so hum breathing, and then you think about this time you struggled, fast forward it to a successful outcome, so that when you show up in front of the client or the founders or other founders or the investors, rather, when you show up in front of the investors, you know that you're the right person at the right time, talking about the right thing to the right people. And once you're clear about that, you're in great shape. Having said that, I've had clients who have a monotone, as you mentioned, totally flat. And they had a technology that was really transformative in the women's fertility field. And I had to coach them. And I part of the reason that I'm really effective with my clients, they transform, is that because the majority of them in 90 percentiles raise the money, because I've taken singing lessons, and I was a salsa dancer, and I used to teach salsa, and I used to perform, and the singing lessons also allows you to understand how to basically perform and show up differently and open your mouth much more much more widely than you would in your native language. So in English, when we're performing, we drop our jaw. So I have them do that. And then I have a practice about when in singing lessons, they have you sing the scale from the bottom of your voice all the way to the top and then go back down the scale. So I privately work with these clients that are monotonous in their tone. And I work with them on all these different techniques that I've had. And because of the salsa dancing, when I was teaching, you have to sort of read the body. You have to see where they're holding energy, where they're more fluid, what's blocking them. And so I can see it, if it's even online, or I can see it also, but also in person, you can see exactly where they're holding, what's holding them back, and then how to loosen up their voice so that they actually can see what's the way to deliver it differently. One other thing is I have them think about a time in their life when they're really, really happy and excited about something, and their voice changes. It's not monotone then. So we have to have them, you know, shift. It takes some work, but it's possible to change the way you speak, the intonation in your voice. And I, when I was in my 20s, my voice was an octave higher. And so no one took me seriously because I sounded like I was a 6-year-old little girl. So I trained my voice to be lower, right? So that I can be taken more seriously. So there's all sorts of techniques that I can use with people to help them change how they deliver. What you think about yourself in terms of this is how I am and I can't change is patently false. There are so many things you can change about yourself. There are attributes that you take on depending on what you think about. So so I teach them how to think differently, basically, and then I model it for them. Then they get to practice it, and when they have several times, and they're able to practice it, and they change.
Sounds great, Beth. I wonder actually how would you improve my performance? What do you think about me doing the? We had a chance to meet in Malta. I would love your feedback.
I think you have your energy, and how you present yourself is very sort of upbeat and curious and positive. And when I was in Malta, you were looking me in the eye when you were talking. The only thing I would have done differently is that I don't know if you remember this, but you were leaning on this high table the whole time as if you were exhausted. Were you tired? Were you tired that night?
I am all the time, Beth. It's like I have a 4.5-year-old daughter. Like I'm actually blinking is like little naps for me still. I didn't recover from 2 years of not sleeping.
Yeah. Yes. So I noticed that you were having trouble supporting your body weight. So you use the table. So I knew.
I was suggesting I should work out a bit more to build some muscle so I can put it all up.
So that
probably.
Yeah. So that was one thing. The other thing is in English, you have a native melody from your Polish, right?
Yeah.
So your English is really good. And in English, we open our mouths more when you're performing, even when you're talking to me now, anytime you're meeting people. And so you have to open your mouth more so that you articulate the consonants more, more clearly when you're speaking. And you also tend to speak, quickly, which is fine, only fine if you articulate more clearly.
Yeah.
So sorry, you asked.
No, we're going to cut this out. So no worries there. And I'm going to, after that, I'm just going to go and sign up for your class, Beth, and we're going to fix whatever needs to be fixed. Beth, speaking about, you know, making people, imagine positive things and think differently. What do you think about visualization? Because visualization is... I think one of the topics that I got interested in recently, there's like positive and negative visualization, like top leaders and pro athletes in the world, they visualize things before they do them, and that helps them perform the top 1%.
Right. So what I was describing before about the Soham breathing, that's the first thing, to make your own energy available to yourself. And the next thing I suggested was that you think of a time, which is visualization, when you struggled and you think about all the factors, and then you think of how successful you were. Mm-hmm. And you fast forward all of that before you start to speak, so that that visualization sees yourself as powerful and successful. So that's one way to use it in your work life in terms of when you're presenting. Some people are very nervous about presenting, and I work with them also if it gets in the way of them actually wanting to present. But the visualization is super powerful. I'm here. I live in this beautiful place in Spain, just south of Barcelona, in a town called Sitges. I live on the beach, and I've been here 9 years. But how did I find this area? I had an image in my mind for 2 years before I moved here of living on the beach, right on the beach with a promenade, a walkway, bougainvillea flowers down below, and a green patch of grass about a couple of stories up. So I'm looking down on the beach. And I went to Valencia. They didn't have that. I went to Barcelona. Didn't have that. I came to Sitges. They had lots of along the beach sort of living. But this is where I live is exactly that. It's amazing. And visualization is very, very powerful. It really is. Even coming to Europe, moving from Silicon Valley 13 years ago, I put in all of these visualizations and a big vision board, it was called. And I made of the impact I'd have globally and everything. So it's all happened.
Mm-hmm. Sounds awesome. Beth, you've worked with everyone, you know, from med tech to AI. What's a pitch rule that works across all industries? Is there a pitch rule like that?
I think you need to realize that it takes much more time to prepare than most people allow. So it takes 90 to 100 hours to prepare a pitch, a 5-minute pitch. Now, that doesn't mean 45 hours each of 2 weeks before you give your pitch. It's the iterations that you do over time. But people need to be aware that it takes a lot of time and energy to prepare before you give a pitch, no matter what. And no matter how many times you pitched before, like I've coached, I don't know, in the last 2 years, about 20 companies who are raising 20 million to 140 million. And they've raised 37 million, 50 million before, but they still took me 13 hours of my time working with them to get their pitch in shape, to raise the next round. And that's 13 hours of my time. So they gave many more hours than that in order to get ready.
Nice. That was some loud church bell. I think that's a sign for us to.
That's my phone.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So, Beth, you bring clarity, right, to founders trying to pitch or like any other people. What's your personal process to cut through the fluff?
I think. And what do you mean by fluff?
Fluff, I mean to make it. Well, that's a good question. To like your goal as a founder when you pitch is to capture interest of the investor, and in order to do that, you have to be, and you have like really little time to do that. Oftentimes, I don't know, it's even like 1 minute that they call it the elevator pitch, right? And so imagine that you're doing the elevator pitch, but the elevator is falling. What's your process to catch through the fluff?
It's what I said earlier, I believe, Marcin. I think that you need to understand who you're talking to and what's important to them. They want to make a lot of money, and they want to understand what the problem is in a way that grabs their attention. So you have to, and you have to know what they're looking for in order to know if that can grab their attention. So I think that's basically the key idea. And the other thing is what I said about showing up with confidence, because that's the that's the baseline you need to have in order for them to want to listen to you.
The body language we already talked about as well. What are founders unknowingly, you know, doing that's kind of killing their credibility? Are they leaning to the table, like not able to hold everybody?
They aren't sitting down. They're standing up where they're pitching usually. Not always. I've pitched some of the EIT funds, so the EIT for public money. They have eight different EIT kicks are called knowledge and innovation communities here in Europe that address some of the global challenges for Europe and the world. And their teams, I've coached them for $450 million, like for all four teams each, and they all won. But they have to sit down when they pitch the five people who are being interviewed. And they have 10 minutes to get that money plus 55 minutes of questions. So one of the things I do is work on all the Q&A, like what are the risks associated with your technology in your company. Mm-hmm. But to cut through the fluff, is that the question then? I have to go back to make sure I remember.
That was kind of. I mean, that was the previous question. The one that I ask you now is like the one thing about a body language that founders kind of that the mistake that they make that kills their credibility immediately.
So one thing is not making eye contact and not standing up straight. So people who are tall, they earn, I believe it's about 34% more than people who aren't tall in the world. It's not fair, but it's the way it is. And even if you're short or medium size, you have to act as if you're tall. You have to stand up straight. You have to look your audience in the eye. If it's online, you have to act as if you can see someone right in front of you and you're talking to them. Yeah. And the thing to realize in person is that when you're speaking, you are not talking to like one out of 300 people, because there was like 300 people in the audience in Malta when I was talking. They're hearing you as if you're having a one-to-one conversation with each and every one of them. So that means that you have to hold your eye contact as if you're talking to someone who's sitting next to you in the room, which means that you hold eye contact with somebody in the audience for 1 or 2 seconds, and then you look to someone else 1 or 2 seconds, as if you're having that one-on-one space right there. So the body language, your eye contact, I think that really matters. And then how you use your voice. Mm-hmm. How you use your voice takes up, it's Dr. Albert Mehrabian at UCLA did research to see how people absorb presentations, Marcin. Mm-hmm. And he found that 38% of how you absorb your presentation is how you use your voice. 55% is your body language, and only 7% is the actual message. Now, that is only true if your voice tone and body language are not aligned with the message. So if your body language says, I'm nervous, I'm hesitant or whatever, you're not looking people in the eye, the voice tone is very flat or monotone, you're not going to get the money because it's conveying the wrong things, no matter what your data is like. So you have to have all of that together. So what I tell my clients, it's important to develop the deck, the flow, so you've got everything in there. You have to develop the narrative very, very edited out. It has to be less is more. So you have to kill your darlings of the things you want to say. Don't give them too much data, because you want to get to the deep dive, which is the next meeting. So it's the first meeting is usually if you have junior people there or you've already got the intro to more senior people, you still want to show up in a way that they want more and tell me more.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying that Beth is that every founder should go and get singing class.
Singing and salsa dancing.
Singing and salsa dancing, exactly. And actually go to the gym so they can hold up their bodies straight.
That's right. That's right.
Right?
That's
that
right.
That would be a fantastic recipe. You once, by the way, Beth, you once said, I extract the best from people. I read it somewhere.
Really?
Maybe.
Doesn't sound like me that I extract. No? I don't extract. Yeah. I regenerate. No, I reframe.
Okay.
I don't extract.
What does, that actually look like in the room?
I believe giving direct feedback is important, and I'm extremely direct about what's working, what's not working, and why. I don't believe in destroying people's egos or humiliating them, because I don't think you can learn that way or change. So I extract the best of people because I model it for them. I teach them what's working for them and what's not working and why. And then I give them opportunity to practice. So it's called deliberate practice, where you know what to do. They say that practice makes perfect, but that's not true, Marcin, if you don't know what to practice well. So once you understand what to do and why you're doing it, which is what I help the teams do, and what to say and what not to say, that the investor understands the value of what you're doing in the world, then people show up, they're transformed. They show up totally differently. And the thing that I like is what I do with my clients is I help them understand the value that they're creating in the world. But it's a way to basically articulate every business conversation they have if for the rest of their lives, or even personal conversations. And so we understand how to show up, what to say, what not to say, and how to say it so that people can hear your value. And one of the key things everybody wants is to have their value perceived and acted on. And that's what I help people do.
Sounds really cool, Beth. Tell me, what's a pitch that gave you goosebumps?
I mean, Marcin, that's really hard because I've coached almost 4,000 companies. And
How do you have to have one? Come on.
No, there is not.
Out of those that you coached, maybe like, I don't know.
I mean, out of those I've coached, I've gotten good. I remember I can see myself getting super excited time after time after time after time saying, oh my God, this is going to transform the world. But I can't give you the name of one because there's too many. Sorry.
No worries there. Let's move on then. If you had, just 30 seconds to rewire a founder's mindset before their big VC meeting, what would you say?
I would say what I said earlier. It's that you need to remember that you're the right person at the right time, talking about the right thing to the right people. Mm-hmm. That's in your mind. And then I would teach them to do the Soham breathing in 30 seconds so that they can sort of gather their energy back. And the thing about it is after you do Soham breathing, you want to expand your energy for that struggle to the success so that you can embrace energetically, you can embrace everybody in the room so mm-hmm. that they see that you show up and that they know that you're the right person mm-hmm. at the right time talking about the right thing to them.
Sounds good. Sounds nice, Beth. Okay, now it's time for a game that you didn't want to play with me, but we're still going to play. I usually play this game at the end of the conversation with my guests. And it's kind of rapid fire questions and like quick questions, quick answers. But in your case, we can extend the answers and make them a bit longer because you're a special guest here on the podcast. And we love you, Beth. You're the best. So here you go. Here we go, actually. Worst opening line in a pitch.
Worst opening line in a pitch. I don't know why I'm up here.
Okay.
Actually, that could be a good opening line.
Would anyone open like that?
No, but that could be a good
one. That could be a good one, actually.
That would be very good because it would make people say, people stand up and say what? And they'd listen to you. So that's the opposite of what you
want to
say.
That's the best opening line in a pitch, actually.
Yeah, that could be a very good one, actually. So, yeah.
Okay, nice. That's a nice answer to this question. One slide most founders should delete from their pitch deck.
Should delete? If they have a lot of too much technical, then they can take out some of the technical. Okay. If you're doing biotech, you need your clinical data to be in there. But yeah, that would be one. Too much technical information.
Best advice you've ever received, either pitch related or in life generally?
Focus on one thing. If you are scattered, if your technology can do lots of different things for lots of different people, you have to just focus on the one thing you're focusing initial, your initial target market focus, and then you can add in the other sort of markets you're expanding to later. Don't throw everything at them at once. They'll absorb nothing.
Nice. I like this one. Worst advice you've ever received?
Don't move to Europe. and I moved to Europe, even though I was given that advice. I said, I'm going.
Okay. Sounds good. No, it doesn't sound that bad. Come on. Don't move to Europe. Yeah, that's a bad advice. Come on. Who didn't like to move to Europe, Beth?
My brother didn't want me to move.
That's your brother. But he loves you. He wanted you to be close to him back in the US. That's why.
Yeah, back in California. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
No, he was just frightened. You know, it's like I moved myself from Silicon Valley over to Europe. I didn't really know very, very many people here, almost and no one. I started off sort of cold and I just built my business up. Yeah. It built really, really quickly, actually. And so I didn't have a plan B. I just came and I was going to make it work and it worked.
Nice. Sounds awesome. I like the story. And also, like, come on, he's your brother. He's been protective and stuff. Like, I can understand this bad advice given to you. So he's off the hook now. Pitch cliche that needs to go.
Pitch cliche. Like, give me some examples of what you think a pitch cliche is.
Something that, you know, like everyone says, everyone believes it's true, but you think it's total bullshit when it comes to pitching.
I mean, if people tell you to make sure you get in as much as possible about your data, That's false. I mean, it's like less is more idea. People show up and they tend to talk way too much about the technology. Even if in AI, I coach a group of AI companies out of Germany, mm-hmm. I think, and of faculty, PhDs, and accelerators. They just you can't bury people in too much information. You have to understand which information to put in so that you have the follow-on conversation. So I think it's the data thing.
Okay. Bev, this is going to be the last one. Give us Bev in 5 words. I know you love this game.
let me see. It's going to be a little bit more than 5 words, but close. Okay. help founders raise funds and get what they desire and deserve very quickly. Nice. That's what I do.
I like it. Everyone, give it up for Bev. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today. It's been such a pleasure to have the conversation with you. And after meeting you in Malta, I've been loving it. Hope you had fun as well. I think that the audience will love it. And it's going to be very useful for early stage founders who actually want to, you know, perfect their pitch. Thank you so much, Bev.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. Yeah, take care, Martin.